Call this meeting to order. This is an online public meeting. It is being recorded. It is October 21st, 2020. My name is Chuck Green and I'm the chair of the Commission on Aging. You should be able to see tonight's meeting agenda on your screen. If you can't see the screen, I will be announcing the agenda items as we move through the meeting topics. Due to the COVID-19 coronavirus pandemic, meetings of the Clark County Commission on Aging will be held in a virtual meeting room. This will allow for safe participation by commission members, staff, and any citizen interested in attending. Members of the public have joined as an attendee, which means you can see and hear the event. If you joined by a computer or mobile device, or you can just hear the event, if you join by phone, I will, for those who are just joining by phone and can only have audio, again, I will be announcing the agenda items as we move along. Other event participants cannot see your video and cannot hear your audio unless you're acknowledged by the commission chair or staff and are unmuted. And I believe Jose will be our gatekeeper for those who wish to and we have a few areas or items on the or times on the agenda where you can join us. This evening's agenda is planned as follows: approval of the agenda, which will carry with it a roll call, approval of the meeting notes from our last couple of meetings, recognition of county staff for support of the Commission on Aging. We will have special presentations from the Area Agency on Aging and Disabilities of Southwest Washington, the Clark County Food Bank, and the Human Services Council on the impact of COVID-19 on older adults' access to food, supplies, and medications. We will then have time for members of the commission to have a meeting debrief. I do want to point out that we will see how things are going as far as when we take questions. If it's possible, and we're moving ahead on time, maybe we could hold, take some questions after each of the presentations. I believe there's a time for after the presentations are completed where we'll turn it over to those from the community who also wish to ask questions of our presenters. That will help us, the commission, with our meeting debrief. Then we'll have a general public comment period, and then communications and announcements from the commission. I'd like to start with a roll call of commission members who are present for this meeting. Commission members, please say I'm here or present or here or after I call your name. If you could mute yourself when you're not speaking, that would help us with the background noise. But when I call your name, please unmute. And let us know that you are attending. First is Amy Gross.
I'm present.
Okay. Franklin Johnson.
Present.
Linda O'Leary.
Present.
Anya Stewart.
Present.
Pam Wheeler.
Present.
Larry Smith. Larry was here. Larry, I think you might be muted.
Okay, try it now. I'm here.
There you go. Larry is here. And then finally, I'm here. we have two other commission members who are not here. Megan McCarthy had a family medical emergency come up and cannot attend. Neither can Nancy Dong, who had an unexpected work conflict come up this afternoon, and she can also cannot attend. I'd like to entertain now a motion to excuse Megan and Nancy. Somebody like to make that motion?
Moved.
Second.
Okay. All those in favor, say aye.
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 All opposed? Abstentions? Thank you. Our two absent members are excused, and I do want to note that we have a quorum. So I'd like to see if there's any changes to the agenda that anybody wants to bring forward. And if there's no changes, can I have a motion to approve the agenda?
I move to approve the agenda.
I second that.
Okay, any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Abstentions? The agenda is approved. Our next item is approval of meeting notes from our August 19th meeting and our September 16th retreat. Are there any additions, changes, otherwise modifications to the meeting notes? All right, hearing none, can I have a motion to approve?
For approval.
Second.
All right, all those in favor, say aye.
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 Aye. All opposed? Abstentions? Okay. Our next item is recognition of county staff for support of the Commission on Aging. And it is my honor to present this proclamation and ask for action from the commission after I finish. Whereas the mission of the Clark County Commission on Aging is to provide leadership, advocacy, community awareness, and partnerships to initiate change toward an all age friendly, livable community. And whereas the COVID-19 pandemic has resulted in curtailment and cancellation of public events and activities involving the Commission on Aging. And whereas Jacqueline Camp and Jenna Kay manage the technology and electronic communications tools necessary to conduct commission meetings, facilitate commission member interactions, and enable the commission to conduct business throughout the period of COVID-19 public gathering restrictions. And whereas Ms. Camp and Ms. Kay facilitated the commission's recent annual retreat, which was conducted remotely and electronically. And whereas Ms. Camp and Ms. Kay have gone above and beyond the call of duty to keep the Commission on Aging members updated on communications, media contact, meetings, and issues. And whereas the Commission on Aging could not have continued to meet without the services and support of Ms. Camp and Ms. Kay. Now, therefore, the Commission on Aging issues this proclamation to show our recognition of and gratitude for Ms. Camp and Ms. Kay for their hard work during 2020. Recognition of Jacqueline Camp and Jenna Kay for meritorious service in Clark County, Washington, to recognize county planning staff for their distinguished and exemplary service supporting the Commission on Aging during these challenging times. Dated this 21st day of October, 2020. Do I have any discussion or any comments from the commission?
Ladies, you have really made us look good. The time you put into, look at Jackie laughing. You guys have, from when I've been on, you have always had our best interest at heart in terms of it, keeping us focused. And I have seen this group really mature and evolve. I think we had members that we needed at that time, and now I think we're really getting members that we need at this time. And you guys are to the credit. You are such great support, but you really are such great leaders, yet not bossy. So you make us feel so smart, and I applaud you. Thank you so much for all you do.
Jackie and Jenna, you have been our backbone. And in addition to all of the things that you have done to facilitate us meeting during this COVID period, you always do extensive and comprehensive staff work to pull information together so that we are at least somewhat abreast of what's going on. So we couldn't do this without the both of you. So thank you so much. Your services are not overlooked and never underappreciated. Thank you.
And I would just like to say that I would love to have
an asterisk on the proclamation that says, and for all the years preceding this, because it's not just during the COVID time that you have been incredibly competent and supportive and glued us together when we were fraying, but it's been always, at least for the 4 years I've been around. So thank you for everything.
As the newest member on this commission, I have to say I've been over impressed with just the level of attention to detail and what you all have been able to pull off really in a challenging time. It's easy to recognize when things don't go well. You guys pay attention so well that you prevent those challenging moments from happening. So it tends to go pretty well. So thank you.
And I'd just like to say amen to all of the above. You've been fabulous to work with. And one of the things I really appreciate is when I have a question, which I think may be kind of a dumb question, you make me feel like no question is foolish. And I am very comfortable asking you whatever I need to ask. Thank you so much.
And I'd like to go ahead and add my comments as well. And I appreciate coming on board as a brand new commissioner, the orientation and the responsiveness that you provided me, as well as assisting me as I when I was the chair last year. I appreciate that very much. One of the important things that makes a commission or a committee or advisory board effective is having a good support staff that keeps up with the members of the board and make sure that they are responsive to the needs of the board members. Thank you.
Okay, I would like now to entertain a motion for me to sign the proclamation as chair of the commission on behalf of the commission, and to forward this proclamation to the county council, the county manager. Do I have a motion?
So moved.
Second.
All those in favor? Say
aye.
All opposed? Abstentions? And it proclamation carries. Now I need to figure out how to get out of full screen view so I can see my script.
Thank you all so much. Jenna and I truly enjoy working with this. And we just are so grateful for you guys as well. And you're so fun to work with and so passionate about what you do. It gets us excited to do it along with you. So thank you so much.
It's the least we could do. And I want to thank Franklin for coming up with the suggestion that we do something. And we kind of had separate discussions over the past month, so we didn't create an inadvertent quorum and make sure that we had this right. So thank you. And Amy, I will definitely make note of their years of service in the email that I'll send this to the county council and the county manager.
Thank you.
Okay, so I am moving us on to our presentations. So we will hear presentations from the local community organizations that assist and or provide older adults everyday needs, such as delivery of food, supplies, and medications. The commission is hoping to learn about how COVID-19 has impacted the older adults they serve and if they have had to modify how they provide their services. Our first presenter is Michaela Springob, Community Services Program Coordinator with the Area Agency on Aging and Disabilities of Southwest Washington. Michaela, I'm going to turn this over to you.
Thank you so much, Chuck, and thank you everyone for having me here. Jackie, do you control the slides? I just want to make sure. Jackie or Jose? Yes, it's Jose, so go ahead. Awesome, Jose. I'll let you know when to switch him over. So. As Chuck said, my name is Michaela Springob, and I am the Community Services Program Coordinator for Senior Transportation and Nutrition at the Area Agency on Aging and Disabilities of Southwest Washington. And what that means is part of my role involves overseeing Older Americans Act funds and ESSET funds and some other sources to provide things like congregate meal services and home delivered meal services and transportation to older adults and individuals with disabilities in our community. Jose, if you wouldn't mind. Maybe. All right, so I included a brief little rundown here at the beginning of sort of the timeline of COVID, just to give some reference and some context to some of the numbers that I'm going to be sharing and some of the other information. So as we all remember, February 29th, Governor Inslee released the emergency proclamation. March 23rd, the Stay Home, Stay Healthy order came out. March 27th is when CARES funding, Coronavirus Aid, Relief, and Economic Security Act funding was released, and then the Families First Coronavirus Response Act on April 1st. And so the CARES funds and the FFCRA funds are two sources that we received a large chunk of money from in order to modify service delivery and for a variety of programs, including nutrition and transportation. So those dollars came out at the end of March, beginning of April, and we got those into people's hands right away. Jose, next slide, please. So some of the immediate impacts that we saw from an agency perspective was the closure of senior nutrition and congregate meal sites. Those were closed at the end of March. The health department shut them down, and that was that. We were done. And so I don't know how familiar everyone is with congregate meal sites, but there are sites open in non-COVID times every day all throughout Clark, or every day of the week in various spots in Clark County, and seniors can go to those meal sites and receive a healthy, nutritious, complete meal, socialize with other folks, and all sorts of good stuff. So those sites were shut down, and those are a really big source of social interaction and engagement for a lot of seniors. So that was a pretty significant impact that we saw, was these folks all of a sudden saw their opportunity to socialize and get out of the house completely just taken away. In response to that, we saw a significant increase in the demand for home delivered meals. The generic name for it is home delivered meals. A lot of people think of Meals on Wheels. It's same kind of concept, and we do work with Meals on Wheels people in Clark County to provide that service. So they saw their demand just absolutely skyrocket in the weeks and months following the emergency proclamation. And that is something that we've seen nationwide as well. I recently attended the National Area Agency on Aging teleconference, and AAAs from all over the nation were saying that this is something that they're seeing too. And it makes sense. Folks who were previously going to congregate sites are no longer doing that, but they're still needing the nutrition. Another thing that we saw was a very steep drop-off of the use of transportation services. Our transportation serves a number of purposes, but we really try to focus on providing service for folks who need to get to medical appointments or essential errands or other sort of essential services. And so since so many medical appointments and things like that transition to telehealth and video visits and phone visits and such, we just saw the need for transportation of physical human beings really drop off pretty quickly there. So that was a big shift that we saw. And then something else that came up that was kind of interesting for us was that the number of transportation volunteers declined pretty significantly. And what we found with those folks is that a lot of those volunteers were older adults who were considered to be part of the high-risk category. And so for their own safety and protection, they had to step back their volunteering opportunities and volunteer time. However, good news is we're starting to see an uptick again these days, but we saw a decrease in transportation volunteers, but a very significant spike in nutrition volunteers. So a lot of folks started volunteering to deliver meals or help package them or, you know, all sorts of good things. So we saw two really sort of opposite reactions in terms of nutrition and transportation or in response to COVID. Jose, if you don't mind. Another senior nutrition program that I help manage is the Senior Farmers Market Nutrition Program. That's a smaller state program where folks can receive $40 worth of vouchers to purchase fruits, vegetables, and local honey at farmers markets. So I included this just because it was a really interesting piece of data to me, because we have a limited number of those vouchers that we can give out to folks. Unfortunately, it's not a huge program, but we saw an increased demand for that this year. Unfortunately, we had the same number available, so we couldn't serve more folks. But we did see greater demand for that. So folks were still trying to access nutrition through the farmers market and those types of options. And then service delivery did have to change for that program. Typically the way folks do it is there's like a big pickup day. So somebody comes, they have to fill out a form, you check their eligibility, and then they get a little packet that has their vouchers, some nutrition information, some education, that sort of thing. But obviously we could not do that because that would involve 1,000 people in one place, and we can't do that with COVID going on. So we switched to a mail delivery system, so sending it via postal mail. That was a pretty big change for folks, but I am happy to report it was pretty successful overall. So we had very limited, you know, lost in the mail or folks not receiving things. It went really well. And as of yet, I do not have a redemption report because the checks can still be used through the end of October. So unfortunately, I can't give you information on how many have been used, but I can let you know that they were really popular this year. Jose, if you don't mind. All right, so nutrition by the client numbers. Just as to give you a little bit of information on my scope, my role covers Clark County in addition to Klickitat, Skamania, Cowlitz, and Wakayakum counties. All of the data I have in the slides for you is Clark County specific, but I can give you anecdotal evidence from the other counties if you're interested. So these are numbers that we pulled from Meals on Wheels people. And between March 13th and May 31st this year, they took on 347 new clients just through Older Americans Act funding through our agency. So that does not include folks who are private paying for meals. That does not include folks in the other counties they serve, like Multnomah or other counties over in Oregon. This is just Clark County. And that increase is, the 347 new clients was something like a 45% increase in clients in that time period. We had 149 of those clients are individuals who live alone and report experiencing some social isolation. So of our client total, that number went up 60%. And then we had a 53% increase in folks who have a household income of less than $20,000. And these are people who are requesting home delivered meals. So after the onset of COVID, these are folks who are saying, hey, we need assistance with nutrition. And you know, how do we access it? So we're seeing that folks who are experiencing social isolation, who live alone, and folks with limited income and resources are responding, saying that they have the highest need. All right, next slide, please. I apologize if you hear the barking dog in the background. So in addition to the changes in volunteers and that sort of thing, there were direct changes to the way that Meals on Wheels people does service delivery. So in the past, what they did was they delivered meals to somebody every single day. So if Betty Sue received home delivered meals Monday through Friday, they showed up at her house Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday that week. With such a significant increase in the number of folks requesting home delivered meals, that became not feasible in terms of fuel, in terms of volunteer time and resources. So what Meals on Wheels people did is they switched to 1 day a week delivery. So they provide a couple of hot meals, some frozen stuff, some shelf stable options, some fresh produce, and they do the delivery 1 day a week. And they did a survey with folks who were receiving meals, and 75% of folks said that they prefer once a week delivery. So that is actually something that they're going to continue beyond the COVID times, if and when they ever end. But they found that folks are really appreciative of that because it gives them a little bit more freedom in their daily schedule, so they don't have to be there to receive the meal every day. And it has also significantly cut back on the wasted meals, because if they were to go to deliver a meal and somebody's not home to receive it, that meal, you know, goes to waste. So they saw waste cut back very significantly in response to the 1 day a week delivery. So folks are a big fan of that. Meals on Wheels people also said, all right, we're no longer having these congregate meals where people are coming together and we can see how we're doing or they're doing. We need to find other ways to connect with them. So they started doing what they call wellness checks and friendly chats. So it's two separate things. Wellness checks are when they call folks a couple of times a week and just say, hey, how's it going? Are you okay? Are your nutrition needs met? Do you have enough food? Is there anything else that you need? And they, between April 1st and May 31st, they made 28,018 calls to 4,035 individual people. And they had an average of 683 calls per day that they were making to check in on folks. And then they also did the friendly chats, which was a volunteer who was just calling people to say, hey, how's it going? Do you want to talk for a few minutes? And to give them that social engagement, and not so much in like a wellness, how are you doing format, but more of like a social, what's going on in your life? Give you the opportunity to talk to somebody kind of way. And they made an average of 79 friendly chat calls per day from April 1st to May 31st. And of those folks, 410 clients lived alone, 107 were veterans, and 445 have incomes of under $20,000. So that's a little bit of the demographic they were calling with those friendly chats as well. So reaching out to some low-income individuals, veterans, and then people who are really experiencing that social isolation. Something that was really great that we came across in response to COVID was that we had partners telling us that they had too much food and they weren't able to get it all out the doors fast enough. I know that that's not always the case, but we were really fortunate there for a while that a lot of the communities really came together and were supporting their community as a whole, but you know, specifically seniors and older adults. So what we found is there was, for example, there was an egg farm in Clark County that donated eggs to Meals on Wheels, and Seize Candy donated some chocolate. So they were able to provide some sort of extra, you know, like bonus items that they wouldn't normally be able to provide when they were delivering those meals. So that was pretty great. And then those ongoing adjustments to service delivery, like I said, they're going to maintain the 1 day a week delivery system. They Meals on Wheels people is now open 4 days a week. So Monday through Thursday is when they do those deliveries. But it's been really, really successful. And I cannot say enough good things about how well they responded to the ever-changing beginning COVID climate and really working together to find the best way to support people who needed food and needed what they had to offer. So Jose, if you wouldn't mind, we can pop to the next one. So transportation, like I said at the beginning, we did see significant reduction in overall requests for transportation at the beginning of the pandemic. We have seen those going back up slowly, but it's been a long time coming and we're still not seeing the numbers we were seeing before the pandemic started. In Clark County, the biggest reduction we saw was in volunteer transportation. We are connected with Catholic Community Services to provide volunteer transportation. And as I said at the beginning, a number of those volunteers were part of the high-risk category, and so they were unable to continue to volunteer. So those were sort of the immediate pieces that we saw. But we do have an uptick in requests since July, which is great. We have seen those numbers steadily climbing, and you can move forward, Jose, that's fine. And we are seeing volunteers returning as well. So good news in transportation. We're always excited to see that, and our providers are still able to meet need, which is great. If you could go to the next one. And then adaptations to service delivery. This was probably the biggest change to transportation that we had during this time. So while we did not have a lot of transportation of physical human beings, you know, to doctor's appointments or to shopping or that type of thing, we did offer transportation for other things. So one of the things that we were able to do with the CARES and FFCRA money is to use our transportation dollars to cover the cost of delivering food boxes and essential needs items to seniors and older adults. So I have a little tidbit to read to you from one of our providers at Catholic Community Services. And just a little bit about how they modified their service delivery. So one of the things that they did was they had requests from outside agencies and churches asking if they could go to food banks and food pantries and do pickups for people and then deliver those items, or in some cases actually go shopping for individuals who are practicing social distancing and not able to leave their homes or, you know, what have you. The volunteers are actually able to go into the store, make purchases for folks, and then deliver those items to those individuals so that they're still getting their needs met. And another example is they had a
an individual whose refrigerator went out and lost all of their food right at the beginning of the pandemic. And because of these transportation dollars that were available, Catholic Community Services was able to send someone to shop for and deliver groceries for that individual so that they were able to maintain their health and safety. So that's really great. And we saw an increase in essential errands and food and grocery delivery across all 5 counties that we serve. That became a really, really big thing, particularly in Klickitat and Skamania counties. We saw a lot of folks needing prescriptions, delivery, grocery delivery, and essential items. All right, Jose, if you don't mind. All right, and then really the ongoing needs that we have related to COVID right now is funding. We do find that a number of our providers have spent the vast majority of their allocations from the FSCRA and CARES funds that were available. And that really is because service has been so high, particularly in nutrition. And the need to, it's become more difficult for our providers to find things. For a while, it was things like to-go containers, gloves were very difficult to find, various personal protection equipment, obviously. So what we were really needing at this point is ongoing funding to support these increased service levels, because the initial funding that we received is now running out and we're still seeing those service levels being maintained. And then the other thing that's always really beneficial is advocacy for the seniors in our community, and just being fully aware of the different and unique needs of seniors and adults with disabilities, things like you know, differences in nutrition, or whether someone's a high-risk individual and needs access to electricity for life-saving treatment, like an oxygen pump or something. So just keeping in mind the needs of those populations and advocating for them whenever possible. All right, Jose, one more time, I think that's the last one. All right, I am finished. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. I'm happy to take questions now, or Chuck, if you'd rather I wait until after all the presentations, that works for me as well.
I think we have time for 2 questions, and then we'll take the rest at the end. Anya?
I have a quick question. Thank you. Wonderful presentation, Michaela. And my first question is, you gave some data, which was lovely, from April to May on the wellness check-ins and the chats, which I think was such a nice pivot for Meals on Wheels. Is there any additional data? So that's just through May, but we're in October. What's happened since then?
This is all that I have right now. Our providers have been so deeply in like service delivery mode that they haven't had time to sort of stop and give us this, you know, updated stuff, because they're so focused on getting things to people. But I can reach out to them and ask for updated numbers and just see where they're at. And then I can absolutely reach out to you and let you know. I can send that info.
Yeah, and then thank you, Michaela. And then any outcomes, if they're tracking the outcomes on that, that would be awesome. Thank you so much.
Sure.
Michaela, this is Franklin Johnson. Thank you so much for your presentation. When your people were conducting the wellness checks and the friendly chats, did they uncover any other issues that seem to be a trend?
They have not uncovered any other issues that they've shared, nothing that's really pressing that they've seen over and over and over again. Really the underlying thing that folks are running into is the social isolation piece that has become a lot more challenging for a lot of people, especially as the pandemic continues to go on. The social isolation, but that, you know, unfortunately wasn't much of a surprise due to social distancing and staying home and staying healthy, that kind of thing. But they have not shared anything else with us, just that people are missing their friends. At this point, we've been without the congregate sites for 7 months or so now, and people miss their friends. They want to go back. So that's really what we're hearing.
So were the friendly chats really embraced?
They were. A lot of folks sort of went the wellness check route, but the friendly chat was really popular. It looks like back in April and May, they reached out to over 650 clients with that. So that's, you know, 650 plus individuals who are having somebody to talk to just for a couple of minutes. Which I think can really, from my time working in direct client services, I know can make a really big difference for folks. But I'll definitely see if I can get updated numbers for you and let you all know the status of that project and where it's at.
Okay, thank you.
I think we'll take one more question from Amy.
Chuck, Michaela, thank you for a very clear presentation. I wondered when you stopped delivering meals and started delivering packages with shelf-stable or prepared or frozen meals, did you do some kind of survey to make sure someone had the equipment they need to keep the frozen food and heat up meals that needed to be hot? I mean, if someone had a refrigerator and a stove, or if they didn't?
Sure. I believe Meals on Wheels did. There is a contracted provider, so I'm not the one out there making direct service delivery. So it's my understanding that they are pretty aware of that. When somebody comes through the front door saying, hey, I'm interested in receiving this service, there is an assessment that they go through, and they are asked questions like, you know, do you have any dietary restrictions? What are your needs? And so I believe they go through that, like, do you have the ability to safely prepare a meal in your home using, you know, these variety of sources? So I do believe they cover that, yes.
Thank you.
Sure.
All right. And then if there's members of the public, we will take those questions after all the presenters are done, so we can make sure we have enough time for all of those questions. Thank you, Michaela. That was a great presentation.
Thank
Our
you.
Next presenters are Alan Hamilton, president of the Clark County Food Bank, and Emily Khalil, director of programs with the Clark County Food Bank. So Emily and Alan, I'm going to turn it over to you.
Well, great. Thank you. First, thanks to the commission for the work that you do for caring for seniors in our community. And I just say thank you. I appreciate the work that you do. We're going to go fast, if that's all right. And then I think we got a bunch of speedy talkers in this group, so and hopefully speedy listeners as well. Give you a little bit of an overview of Clark County Food Bank, because a lot of the work that we do with people in the community is some of it is senior specific, some of it is not, but a lot of the help that seniors are getting and the changes that have taken place in the midst of the COVID pandemic really are embedded in the overall structure. So a little bit of a high flyover and then a little bit of detail, and I'll start. So the mission, go to the next slide. The mission of the Clark County Food Bank is to alleviate hunger and its root causes. And really all that means is getting food to people who need it today, and then also addressing what gets people in that situation to begin with. Since COVID, we've mostly focused on the first one because the demand has been so great and the kind of the food supply chain was so interrupted, as you remember back in April, that's all that could be done. And with social distancing requirements, the root cause work that we do, or most of the root cause work that we do directly, required face-to-face interactions. And so most of that was put on pause. Without getting into more detail there, the next slide gives you a little bit of a map of our network. So we are what's called a regional food bank. So about 8 million pounds of food pass through our warehouse. A good portion of that we do direct service, so direct to client work in pantries that we manage, as well as a variety of other direct service platforms. But the bulk of it is still done with 43 partners at 130 distribution sites throughout the county. And so these are partners that are food pantries, which is kind of a come one, come all, walk up and get food experience. So that would be a family, it would be a single person, and it often is a senior. So for us here yesterday at the Clark County Food Bank, a program of food delivery that we're doing in a drive-by food pickup environment, which is more COVID friendly than other methods, because it's a low touch experience. The individual stays in their car. Lots of people of all ages, but a high percentage of seniors came to our literal parking lot yesterday, picking up, I don't know, 15,000 pounds of food collectively, probably more than that, actually. Emily will know in a minute. And so that's a model that's being used now. That's a food pantry in a COVID situation. There are hot meal sites, but like was presented, like we heard a few minutes ago, those have paused for the most part due to the social distancing requirements. And then there are a lot of our partners at what we call special service sites. So that's a program that someone might be enrolled in. Many of those don't include the senior community, but that's a bit of an overview as to how the food gets out to about 100,000 people in our community. We'll give you a sort of the percentage of those that are seniors in a minute, and I'll let Emily take the next slide.
Yeah, so the first category that of our food partners is our food pantries. And so this looks a variety of ways throughout the community. There's 21 We've been really impressed by them. They've all stayed open during COVID. So all of the same food stores where people go and get a food box have been open this whole time, which is pretty cool. They all operate a little bit differently because most of them are run by independent nonprofits. So some of them have modified really significantly due to COVID. So they might be doing a drive-through similar to what Alan was talking about how we do here right now. Or they might still just allow people indoors, but maybe with a pre-boxed box rather than shopping for their own food. So they all have their own ways of managing the COVID safety requirements in their sites. And then really, if you want to resource people or tell people how to get to these, all of these are on our website. But a lot of times people get pretty concerned about going to a food pantry that they might not know what to bring with them, how to do it appropriately, if they qualify, just have them reach out to us. The answer is basically, if you mess up absolutely everything, you didn't mess up anything and you'll still get food. So just encourage people to go, give it a go. But if they do want to flesh out some of those details with us, we'd be happy to talk to anyone about any of the site specifics so that they feel really prepared before they go get food. If you want to go to the next slide. Another way people can get food, there's some delivery options. These are special COVID options that didn't happen before and now are happening. So we are doing like individual home delivery. So if someone reaches out and just says, I can't make it to a food pantry, then we'll bring them a food box. We reached out to a bunch of different senior living facilities. And so we contact them weekly, say how many people, how many boxes do you want, what are their addresses, and then we'll go door to door and drop boxes at those sites. Other living facilities, so some like Caples Terrace, where when an individual graduates from foster care program, they can go live at that site and get some other resources and support. And then Safe Park, which is where people are currently allowed to park their car overnight without getting towed, delivering there. And then isolation quarantine hotels and motels. So many people are up in those sites right now, and so we'll deliver there. And then we are not the only ones who deliver. Human Services Council like amped up their delivery, which I'm sure they'll tell you about pretty wildly, which is awesome. So they're doing a lot of individual home delivery. And then Meals on Wheels, which you heard from Michaela, was really just absolutely amazing to watch them kind of leap into action when COVID hit. Here's the next slide. Another way someone can get food is at a meal site. As Alan mentioned, a lot of the meal sites are trying to sort out how to do that safely, just like a restaurant is. So one of our meal sites has been closed since COVID and will continue to be so. The other sites are open, but are
Did Emily freeze on the rest of you too?
Yeah, she froze.
She went away.
Emily, you might want to turn off your video and still go with the audio.
I'll pick up. Yeah, I can pick up. We're literally in the same building, just not in the same office at the minute. Nope, she looks like she's logging back on, but most of the meal sites went away. There are a couple that continued. Free Hot Soup was one that does direct service to clients in the park, homeless individuals there. And then also the Proto Cathedral of St. James the Greater is currently closed, but was doing some work prior as well. If you haven't figured it out, go ahead to the next slide. I'm not going to talk about our nutrition education programs, but I'm sorry, you did go to the next slide. Thank you. But we because we've paused that, but the whole meal food distribution network in Clark County is messy. It's not unorganized. It's just messy. We haven't, you know, you heard kind of about a variety of ways that food gets out previously. We've talked about a whole lot of others. There are lots of groups that are doing food distribution, some on very micro levels, whether that's a church that takes care of its own attendees, or a neighborhood cul-de-sac that kind of connects to people around them. But there are lots of versions of this out there. We don't try to coordinate all of that, but we do try to resource whatever we can. So we work both very formally, contracted agreements with about 45 different nonprofit organizations, as well as informally with a lot of groups. So you're going to hear today and otherwise about lots of programs that exist. All of that is just fine for us. It's the mess, in a sense, of what it takes to run a community, what it takes to get food out there. We're continually trying to reorganize it and make it better, but it is difficult. So go ahead and skip to the next slide. A little bit of data. Emily was going to go over this, and she's actually smarter on this than I am, which is...
I'm back with you,
Alan. Oh, good.
Yeah, sorry, you guys. One computer died, but the other computer is still alive, so just not without a camera.
All right.
So we try not to like over-survey our people, but every couple of years we do a pretty big survey through all of those partner agencies that Alan mentioned. And when we did that last was a couple of years ago, but a couple details about seniors specifically. So 27.6 of the clients who responded at a food pantry said that they were 51 to 64 years old, 21.8% said they were 65 plus, and then 33.7% said that at least one person in their house was 65 or older. So they might themselves be younger, but that they still had a senior living with them. You want to go to the next slide?
And also maybe important to know too is that's out of about 100,000 people. So 27% in the first data point there would be roughly 27,000 people. Total numbers of individuals are hard to collect. Because we're not constantly badgering people for, are you showing up for food any other place? How many times have you come for food? What other kind of unique identifiers? We don't require social security numbers and IRS 1040 statements to get food. It's a reasonably anonymous experience, and it's designed to be that way. So sometimes this data can be difficult to know with some level of certainty.
Yeah. And then just to... we're kind of like jumping in and jumping out a little bit, but the other people that we serve based on the languages spoken, so participants could select more than one language, but when asked what their languages spoken were, it looks like 76% said English, 11% said Spanish, and 13% said Russian. Go to the next slide. And then just another different lens on who's being served for these pantries based on their race origin. So when people were asked this, white Anglo was responded 65% of the people said that they were white Anglo, 5% Slavic, 6% Black African American, 11% Latino Hispanic, 4% American Indian, Native American, and 9% other.
And then when we, no, go ahead to the next slide, when we looked at, you know, tried to summarize in a short list, what are the challenges that we've seen seniors experience in particular during the COVID time, but in general as well, mobility and access to the food. And Michaela kind of did a good job of talking about how difficult this is, but it's really been an issue for a couple of reasons. One is they're less mobile to begin with in many cases. Secondly, some of the resources to get to them to those places require volunteers who maybe weren't willing to venture out. We have a very large volunteer base here. About almost 70,000 hours last year of volunteers helped us. Many of those folks are seniors. Many of them stopped coming to volunteer at the food bank when COVID hit. That created some real challenges for us in terms of how we get the work done. They are our best volunteers. They're brilliant. They're lovely humans. Many of them do it as a form of gym club membership. We have lots of folks that come every single day, and it is in lieu of a gym membership because they're on their feet. It's a social experience, and it's really good work. And so that changed a lot. And when you add in now the complexity of COVID, this mobility thing, transportation thing became a much greater issue. As it comes to getting food for people who are food insecure, seniors in particular, that required a huge upgrade for us in all kinds of individualized distribution because they weren't willing to go out, even if it were available not too far from their house. Lots of people, and I'm sure you saw this on, say, you know, phone apps like Nextdoor, social media, Facebook, those kinds of things, became very, very helpful in March, April, May, even June with, like, I'll go to my grocery store and buy food for any neighbor who has it. It's a beautiful thing. It's not very scalable, but it was beautiful to watch. I saw a lot of that. We tried to scale that with a system of call in, email in, and we'll deliver food to you. And we're still doing that every single day. Concerns about contracting COVID-19, embarrassment for a senior can be a big deal. The drive-through success that we've experienced with getting food in a pre-box is, I think, partially because it is more convenient and more safe. But I think it's all also one of the reasons for success is because there's less embarrassment in the process. I don't have to get out of my car and walk in and be seen as openly. And so that's a big deal for folks, especially elderly folks who have, I'm going to call it, the right kind of pride, the sense of human dignity. And that's something they want to hang on to. And I respect that greatly. But it's a barrier we try to help overcome through a variety of ways. Isolation was already mentioned. Language barriers can be a challenge. And then just the impact of COVID on finances. And I think we're to maybe our last slide coming up here. Things we have faced at the food bank for us in terms of how this all works is how we get food has been modified greatly. How we manage or process it with the volunteers is different because we have much smaller groups, much higher levels of sanitation required, and social distancing and so forth. How we distribute it because of the shopping style, walk in, look around, get close to humans strategy doesn't work. And then of course, who needs it? The opportunity has grown much greater. We don't know what the future looks like specifically there. We're just gonna make sure that we have enough food.
And two quick notes, one for the language barrier here mentioned, Alan mentioned on the last slide. Many of our seniors are Russian speaking. So that's just an interesting little subset of people in our community who need food resources and also cannot speak or read or write in English. So that's why that one was kind of on there. And then same with the impact of COVID when he says, who needs it? We've never had so many people reach out and say, I've never ever done this before. I usually donate to the food bank. I don't even know how to get food. So we have had an astounding amount of brand new people who don't even know what the food system is or where to start or anything like that. So that's one of those elements that has changed during COVID.
And Jose, do go to the next slide. I guess we'll finish with this one. I was going to quit early on it. But these are some important ways. They're pretty obvious from our perspective, maybe not to yours, but how seniors get food. They're really the ways that most people can get food in the community. It's a little bit of a mystery for most people if they've never accessed food. Well, how do I do this? And really, there's a little bit of a query. We get obviously many calls each day with this question. How do I get food? Where do I go? What do I do? What do I have to bring? How do I qualify? And essentially, the first thing we want to know is where are you located and where are you able to go to get it? And if the answer is, you know, I'm in Hazeldale, then we find a pantry in Hazeldale that's probably open adjacent to them or nearby. If they're unable to go out, then we'll find someone who will deliver it. If they have a family or a friend, we encourage that because then there's a relational context and there's some longevity that can be built into getting the food to them. But food really comes in a variety of ways. There were many communities that actually, in one sense, are more food secure through COVID because it forced people to come together and resource and help in ways that they didn't have time for before or didn't have inclination for before. But really, it's a variety of ways and a variety of methodologies. So we'll stop there. Happy to do questions. Happy to help in any way we can. And obviously, we can talk all day, but you don't want that.
All right. Thank you. I have been multitasking because I just got text from Amy, and her system went down at home. I had to look up the phone number, so. Jackie, I might need you to help, or Jenna might need you to help Amy get on the phone connection here. So a couple questions, and then we'll get to our final presentation, but I actually will start this one. My wife, Linda, is one of those who are the organizers or leaders of the Clark Neighbors Food Project, and otherwise known as the Green Bag Project. And they just had a pickup last week, and she added up, they've donated over 100,000 pounds of food to the various pantries and food banks in the county. Our Rotary also has supported Rotary Club of Three Creeks has supported you and others. So if there are organizations who want to directly contribute to you or to the program, who would they talk to? How would they get that
connection? Well, we know your wife, and we love the work that the Green Bag Project does and have been really excited to see that kind of happen at a relational grassroots level. We love that because it having the heart and compassion travel with the food is a beautiful thing, and that's part of that project. So pass that on to her.
I will.
You know, I mean, we appreciate donations. We need them, both of money and time. They can contact me, but that's really, I appreciate the question, but we have a very solid, faithful donor base. Our needs have never been greater, but our donations have never been stronger really than they are. And, you know, Three Creeks Rotary and on have been very, very kind and generous in the past. So they can always contact really anyone here, and we'll help them figure out what the right path is in terms of time or food or in if you know money's if appropriate.
Thank you. So a couple of Tanya.
Thank you. Great presentation. Food is a really interesting topic for me. I'm a physician, and I have historically in the past volunteered at various food banks, and have noticed in the past that the food that's offered to some of the families is not entirely healthy, whole foods and fresh, and contributes to some of the illnesses that we see that are really becoming quite prevalent, like obesity and diabetes, et cetera. So I was completely unaware that you all were offering classes and, you know, just education on nutrition. That's fantastic. I know that things, as you mentioned, shifted a bit with that. But I wonder, is there a future, like a plan as you look into the future to continue progress towards really embracing healthy whole foods and making a little more of a statement to the companies that make foods that may not be quite as healthy for our population to say, you know what, even at a food bank, we're not going to accept that. And I know that there's a balance between addressing hunger, but there's also a balance to how do we just make sure that we actually get food that's really good for our population. Yeah.
I love the topic. We're you and I are aligned here. We have six full-time nutrition educators here. Five of them are AmeriCorps, one is a staff person. All of them are doing classes now in a virtual video or small group environment. So we have gone back to that. I didn't talk a ton about that because it's not a specific senior focus, but it really is an important part of our second half of the mission to alleviate the root causes. We work very hard at, you know, we do refuse lots of food, all kinds of food, whether it's soda or candy or things that don't fit the nutritional quality that we're looking for. Not all of it, but much of that is rejected. Food freshness, you know, in the last decade, the food banking has changed significantly to produce as a primary food asset and fresh food in that. And so much less of the sort of boxed macaroni, top ramen approach to what used to be there. It's a very important part of what we do. We work with pretty much every hospital and health clinic in town for our, you know, we do diabetes, you know, pre-diabetes and diabetes referrals. We have classes that are specifically, so it's a national based curriculum that is kind of our core focus that has a diabetes emphasis so that we teach some of that. We do grocery store shopping classes. So we literally meet at Winco Foods and we walk you around and show you how to read labels, buy in bulk, shop the perimeter, not, you know, do the end cap, eye level kind of stuff. So it's a lot of education and a lot of just sort of basics because we all need that. I mean, college kids don't necessarily have it. They need it, whether they experience, you know, financial challenges or otherwise at any age. And so it's a big part of what we want to be about. It's been disappointing for us in the past 6 months to not have that as strong as it's been, but it's coming back and it needs to be there.
So I'm going to just comment. I appreciate that so much. And I'm just going to offer a quick little plug here. I am on the board of a nonprofit organization called Crusonia on the Delta. Though they're based in Memphis, Tennessee, their goal is to really address the intersection between agriculture, access to healthy whole foods, and health. There may be some interest. It's free. There's a free conference, but there may be some interest with your team. I'm more than happy to follow up after as appropriate.
It.
Yeah.
I'd love to hear more.
Okay, I'm going to have to move us on because we've got one more presentation. I want to make sure that we get time to have some questions after that. Jenna or Jackie, I've been getting texts from Amy that the 408 number that she's trying to dial into is getting rejected. So if you've got an alternate way to maybe get something to Amy, maybe we get her involved again. Our last presenter is, I'm hoping I pronounced this right, Jeanne Edwards, Special Transportation Manager with the Human Services Council. So please speak it away and let me know if I pronounced your name incorrectly or correctly, and correct me if I'm wrong.
It was perfect. Thanks,
Chuck. All right.
And I do really want to thank the commission again for letting us come and speak. We always enjoy getting to share what we do, especially as we all figure out still how we're going through COVID and how we'll continue to improve this. I know we've spent a lot of time working with Michaela and the people at AAA and Alan and Emily and just trying to find out how we can serve the most people. Transportation is one of those things that you don't really think about until you don't have it anymore. And then it becomes really important to us. So Jose, if you go ahead, next slide. So when we're looking at the trends that we see, we had a tremendous decrease in our calls and our transportation in April and May. In April, we had a 72% decrease in need of transportation. And a lot of that was because medical facilities were closed and people weren't getting out at all. And then we had the total shutdown. But also a big part of ours is the volunteer driver program, getting people out for social events, which is a lot of our seniors. And that totally stopped. It also coincided at the same time that I lost 80% of my volunteer drivers during that time, because they, for the most part, are older drivers as well as in a higher risk group. So that was kind of the win for it for us, is that we didn't have drivers, but we at least weren't having to tell people no. We've seen a slow increase and starting to build up in the trips of September. As for agency, for all of our programs, we're still down 34% of transportation requests over last year. So still building it up. But the nice thing is we're able to get out to people in other ways as well. We are seeing a change in what people are asking for, especially our seniors that I wanted to call out. We're getting calls now for people who want us to pick up library books for them because they're not getting that other ways. They're trying to bring stuff in, which I thought was great. So I'm trying to mention it to a lot of our passengers and see if there's something that we could do for them, such as, and try to throw out some other things. A lot of our people are still just very isolated, and we're seeing it as we have any calls with them. The calls, we're spending more time on them, kind of doing like a wellness check. If I have people who were taking rides and aren't, we're just trying to reach out and see if there's anything we can do for them. They may not have to go, but maybe they, you know, just need a check-in, or maybe they want to go. Haircuts is something we've started switching over and saying, you know, we could get you out for that if you haven't. So next slide. So the medical transportation, that's the one of the main focus of Human Services Council. So anyone with Washington State Medicaid who's needing medical transportation, we're still available to do all of that. Our employment transportation program is significantly down. We do think that's going to be the program that, as we start rebounding, is going to see the most increase as people are able to get back to work. The nice thing about that is our funder allowed us to change our needs in that. And that's where we're actually funding the trips so that we can go out and pick up food boxes for people. We can pick up groceries, pharmacy, anything like that, and deliver it to them and not have to have them get out. And we're able to keep them safe. We are able to set up weekly food boxes for a lot of people and deliver it to them. So it's been really nice. Volunteers in Motion, still going strong. Definitely, you know, we've lost a lot of our volunteers, and I don't know if they'll come back or not. They're still not ready to. Trying to find out how you make it safe for drivers who are in their own vehicle to take people was a challenge for us, but we've got that all figured out now. We're starting to take people out once in a while for major social things. And as I said, trying to get people to hairdressers, that type of stuff. But the majority of ours is still medical and nutrition now. We still have the Trip Resource Center. So anybody who is looking for how do I get from here to there can go on. If you haven't done it before, it will let you know if what's the best option from Amtrak, the bus, private car, anything like that, as well as give you directions. We are spending a lot of our time doing deliveries now instead of doing transporting people. When the police department was no longer able to do the pharmacy runs, we really worked with them to make sure everybody knew they could call Human Services Council and we can get those pharmacy runs done for them. We're able to still maintain pretty much, if you call us today, we can get it out for you today. So that's been really a help for a lot of people. Yeah, it's been great, Alan. And I appreciate you guys really pushing people our way and us being able to push people your way and get that done. The drive-through food banks, we do a lot of that with our brokers. We're able to take some of our vendors and they'll go through the drive-through ones and still take it to people. And that has been fantastic for us. And sometimes we can even coordinate two or three people and get it all done in a really quick manner, get the food to people. And it helps because so many of our senior passengers, one, are still self-isolating and don't want to get out, but two, just that they've never had to use a food bank before. They don't want to use a food bank. They've never had to call somebody and ask for a, you know, prescription to be picked up. And just anything we can do to lower that threshold and not have to get them in the car and take them makes it easier for a lot of them. So I'm really appreciative of every organization that allows that funding to be channeled into other ways and let us figure out what'll work for people. Right now, we also have a pilot that's going. This is a long time in the making. So it's not the best time for us to try a shuttle. But for people out in North Clark County, we have started a shuttle where we're picking up in different areas of that part of the county every day of the week, Monday through Friday, taking people up into Battleground so that they can get their medical appointments done, shopping, that type of thing. Because of COVID, we're being really flexible on what that means. We're not putting, you know, six people in a shuttle van and taking them. We're limiting how many. We're taking a lot of them door to door. But it's working well, and we're getting to get those people out. And it's a place that's been difficult for a lot of us. Go ahead and do the next slide. And I just really wanted to do the, how can you help? If you have somebody that you can check in on them. It's, we're all feeling isolated. I know I'm doing Zoom meetings with family to try to not feel so disconnected. Our most vulnerable people are really feeling it, and they don't have somebody to reach out to, and they're feeling very alone. We're getting calls for people who just want me to look up on the internet for things that they normally do themselves, but now they can't. How do I get my ID updated? Social Security, places that aren't really taking phone calls and are pushing people to the internet really make it difficult for some of our older population who are not tech savvy or don't have the ability to do it. So that's just one area where, as a transportation service, we normally wouldn't have any connection with that, but we certainly are doing it right now and love the fact that we're being able to help. Get the word out about that North Clark County shuttle. It's new, and so people in Yakult and up there don't know we have that available, and we're really trying to get the word out. And so I asked Jackie to put the flyer in with stuff now so that we can get the word out and try to get some more people using that. But the how to help, continue funding us, right? We're all very concerned with what the future looks like. As our funders' funding goes down, what does that look like for us? So anything that protects us, those the PPP loans, those type of things were just tremendous for us and needed. We had to move all of our call center out to remote staff as well. We're a fairly small agency, 25 people. That was a huge, tremendous expense for us to do that. So, you know, just everyone being aware of how it's hitting small nonprofits as well, really could use that. And, you know, just as we open services more, like I mentioned, if you can't get a driver's license right now, that's difficult. I'm trying to onboard new volunteers, but I can't get fingerprints for them and just those type of things. And how do we all navigate through all of that is something we all refer, you know, commissioners and elected officials to really help us through that as well. And yeah, I'm going to go ahead and end it there so we've got some time for questions.
Thank you. So I'm going to open it up to the commission first. Questions for Jeanne or any of our other presenters you wanted to bring up? And I'm seeing Pam.
Yes, this question is for you, Alan. You mentioned that the food bank services on food to senior living facilities. What kind of facilities are those? Are they foster homes? Are they assisted living?
I missed you. What, say again the question, to what kind of facilities?
Senior living facilities.
So Emily brought, she had to leave, but she brought me the data on, or the information on that, anticipating this question. So not all of these are senior, but Kirkland Union Plaza, Mill Creek Senior Estates, England Manor, Knights of Pythias, Vista Court, Lewis and Clark Plaza, Wisteria Manor, Capel's Terrace, and then in terms of the facilities, that would be the ones at the senior level.
Yeah, okay, got it, thank you.
And we don't expect all of those to continue. There are other partners that have delivered, some partner agencies have delivered to those in the past or brought food as needed. But when the crisis came, we kind of unified all of that. And, you know, because we have forklifts and trucks and all that kind of stuff, it just became much easier and more efficient to do that. And my guess is over time, we'll go back to something that is a little bit more spread out. But we don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you very much.
Yep.
Okay. I just took myself out of the right view. Others with questions?
This is Franklin Johnson. I have a question for Alan Hamilton. In your presentation, you had made a comment about the overall, I guess, lack of coordination, how it was messy. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah, I use that word, and it's not always clear. It's clear in my head. What I mean is the geographic distribution of the pantries is not perfect. The food flow in, we have some grocery stores that participate, some that don't. My church says, hey, we want to give food. I say, great. Do you want to give it to everyone and anyone? They're like, oh, no, we just want to give it to the people that attend here. I'm like, great. So they can't be a partner agency of ours because they show a discrimination, so to speak, in who they give it to. But we like it. I'm glad they're giving food away to people who need it, just not in the system that I operate in. We have some partner agencies that say, hey, some of this food requires asking the client questions. We don't want to ask them those questions, so we're not going to distribute USDA food. USDA says, hey, our food's going up. It's going to be much more next year, this past year. We say, what kinds of food? They say, we don't know. You'll know kind of when the truck hits your dock. And the truck hits the dock, two trucks hit the dock instead of one, 2 days earlier than we were told. And all of a sudden, we have to figure out how to distribute 40 pallets of garbanzo beans, which is not so bad because you can store those, though we don't like to store food. I want to be bad at food storage, great at food distribution. But you might get a truck of onions, and they're supposed to be excellent, and 10% are rotting, which means in a week, 40% are rotting. And so that's what I kind of mean by messy in terms of the food flow, how it gets distributed. Some people would love to go to a pantry and engage with a human. Some are scared to death of that. Some don't mind speaking English when that's not their primary language. Some can't. And so that's kind of the uncoordinated effort I'm talking about. I don't think there's another way to do it. I kind of look at it in one sense as a library. A library doesn't supply the reading needs of the entire community. It serves a function for a group, and it's, in my mind, a very valuable and essential function. And all of these strategies of getting food to people, messy, as I say, I think is kind of the only way to get it done, because each feeds a segment. Of course, we're missing segments. Of course, we're missing groups of people, parts of the community that we just don't know about, or we just don't have the resource for. But that's kind of what I mean. I know it's a long answer to a pretty simple question.
No, I appreciate that. Thank you.
Do we have any other questions from the commission? Larry?
Yeah, Alan, is there a partnership with Oregon Food Banks? And I'm thinking generally with all this fires and all the people evacuated, obviously there was a significant needs from food. Does Oregon tap in and ask for assistance on this side of the river?
There is a relationship. They had plenty of food. You know, by the time the fires hit, the food supply chain was very full. Contrary to what you might hear, there's plenty of food to get to people. And that's been true for months. for since maybe July. There really is, we've never had more food in our system than we have now, much of that federal food. So there was a lot, Larry, that's a great question, but lots of food. We partner extensively with Oregon Food Bank. They're part of Feeding America, which is a national food, you know, a relief organization. We're part of Feeding America also, and so we work together. We do receive some of our food from them. Almost never have we given them food unless we've had an abundance from a donor locally. There aren't a lot of food manufacturers, growers in Clark County for that abundance to spread out like there are in certain other growing regions of the state or Oregon. But a good partnership, good relationship, and appreciate them greatly.
Thank you, Alan.
Any other questions from the commission before we open it up to the community? All right, Jose, could you let people who are joining us from the community learn how they can jump in and ask questions or even make comments? Might as well open it up to everything here.
Okay. I think we're down to three folks as attendees, down from eight. And so let's see. So if you're on the joining us via computer, there's the raised hand icon under the participants tab that you would need to press if you want to be recognized, and then I can unmute you and you can make your comment or ask your question. If you're calling in, you can just dial *3, would have the same function, and then I could unmute you and you could ask your question or comment.
Okay. I give a couple minutes for the two people left on to if they want to ask any questions. Otherwise, I'll return it back to the commission. You see any raised hands, Jose?
I do not.
Okay. Well, any remaining questions from the commission before we thank our guests and have a little quick discussion about what we can take away from this? Yes, Franklin.
First of all, I just wanted to thank all of our presenters. This was very enlightening. Is there anything, and this is to all of the presenters still here, is there anything this group can do to aid the advocacy aspect of what you're doing?
I'll share one thought. I actually just love it that the community I live in has a commission doing this work. It makes me happy. It pleases me. I wish my parents had been this well taken care of by leaders in their community. I don't know if we can normalize the idea of that getting help is okay, but it's one of the cultures we work hard at trying to, you know, to reduce barriers, destigmatize. You go through all your structural things to make the experience high dignity as much as possible. But also just even in the way we talk about it, I have a hard time with like nailing the perfect vocabulary, and we live in an age where words really matter. But I think it's a heart thing in one sense that, yeah, of course we're in trouble. Of course I'm lonely. Of course I'm needy. Of course I don't have all the resources, and to normalize that. So I think just in our conversations and language, I would love if we could push that out. I don't know that we're a big enough group to change everything, but it's a beautiful thing to see you guys talking about this in the way that you are wanting to learn, and I would love to push that out. So my request is, let's find ways to do more of that.
All right.
Sorry.
I understand. Go ahead. Sorry, Michaela.
Sorry, Chuck. I was just going to say I would echo everything that Alan is saying right now. And I think on like a micro level, the best thing any of us can do is to talk to the people you know, talk to the seniors you know, talk to friends, family, people in line at the grocery store, you know, whoever it is, just really communicate with people and be part of the community and share the information that you have here and that you learned tonight with other people, because the number of referrals and calls and the amount of engagement we get that says, you know, my friend Chuck called me and he told me about this thing that my mom might be interested in. Like, we get that second, third, fourth, free a lot of the time, and that's how we can bring more people in. So spreading the information, just talking about it or saying like, here, call this phone number, go to this website, whatever it is, that's a big help too.
Excuse me. All right. I guess I'm going to return this and ask the commissioners, what can we take away from this other than the fact I've just been learning how to deal with four different media at the same time to try to get Amy re-engaged and connected? So anybody want to jump in? And
so this is Tanya. I've learned a lot in this brief conversation. I apologize. My cameras have been kind of glitchy tonight for some reason. So I feel like maybe there's an opportunity just to be able to spread information more. I'm not sure. I would love to do as much as we can as a commission, but I feel empowered that I know a lot more today than I did, or I should say this hour than I did the hour before.
I think I learned that it is that many nonprofits have had to blur a lot of lines to get the job done. And I really appreciate that the reason that nonprofits exist is to fulfill their mission and maybe help others fill theirs as well. So I really like the fact that to blur the lines and having to talk with each other and maybe other sectors of the economy, governmental, for-profit, to get the job done. And I appreciate how they do it and with respect and caring. And I applaud you all.
I think one of the takeaways for me is how your agencies adapted to the COVID.
I think Pam just froze on us.
We'll finish your sentence in whatever way we each deem appropriate. Okay.
Well, if I could jump in, I'd just like to say I was really kind of tracking in all of the presentations how you were agile in responding to the impacts of COVID and adjusting to that. And that's really appreciative. I think there's a lot of lessons to be learned from this experience with COVID, because unfortunately, we're probably going to live through this again, hopefully not in the too near future, but your commitment to your mission is just really impressive and appreciated. And the fact that you are sensitive and aware to the clients that you serve and some of maybe their barriers or reluctance to come forward is really appreciated. So thank you very much.
And one more thing, when I think of food, Alan, I think that until a person is well fed, nothing else will be accomplished. And so you're really at the cusp, your services are at the cusp to help them get all the other things done.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and the funny thing is tomorrow they need it again, and then the next day they need it again.
Now, just one comment. What we've learned, at least one more time, is the importance of volunteers. Never be taken for granted in what they do and what they provide and so forth. They're out there, they show up. Some of them are in their 70s and 80s and driving and contribute to make this a solid community. You can never thank them enough. And you can see these organizations depend on volunteers so much to make sure that they get the job done.
So I'm going to add, when we I helped my wife with the last pickup last weekend for the Green Bag Project, and we dropped off at 6-8 Church. And they mentioned that their goal is to provide food for a week at a time, and basically take food the need to pay for food out of that equation so families can spend what money they have on things like rent, utilities, and just the living. I found that an interesting philosophy, and I applaud that. I'm assuming others have that same philosophy as to see what you can do to provide more than one day at a time. But I bet it's a very tough way to do it.
I'll comment just to say you're right. There are some pantries that have that approach. The food flow allows for that currently. Other pantries don't want to meet that kind of a need. They want to do something else. But there is a lot to be said for if we can take food off the table, what else then rises to the top of the list to be addressed? So it just creates obvious logistical challenges, and you have to shrink your client load probably to make that happen.
So I'm in the transportation business, and transportation includes transportation of information. So I've noticed what COVID has shown us is how it can really disrupt the logistics, the distribution chain, but it can also disrupt our bandwidth. We really need to improve our broadband in this county, and not just in the county, but nationwide. During this meeting, I've been noticing that. So very interesting takeaway for me on the transportation side. Anything else?
Yeah, this is Franklin Johnson. Just one more question. And this is to all of the presenters. Most of what I've heard is talking about delivering food to seniors. Do you have any sense of the impact with kids, you know, that might be living with seniors or anything? Is there any sense of that?
I will jump in and say from the Agency on Aging perspective, I don't have a lot of information on that because my role is so senior specific. I do know we have some programs that serve families who, like older adults who are caring for a relative child. So example, like a grandparent raising a grandchild. And I know we have seen some need pop up through there, but I think the other presenters will have more information than I have on that one. So I'll defer to them.
I've got nothing on kids with seniors. I have a lot on just kids and families, but nothing specific with how many seniors are living in the same environment with children. If we have data on that, I'm not aware of it yet.
Ours would be the same thing, Franklin. A couple of anecdotal things, but it wouldn't be anything we track. And like Michaela, ours is focused on pretty much all of our programs are for seniors or for people with disabilities. So we don't have a lot that we do that would track kids.
We do collect birth date data on household clients within a household. So we just haven't done anything with it. It's there, but it might be worth taking a look at it. Yeah.
Okay. I was just concerned. We had talked earlier about some of the issues of getting food to kids now that, you know, they're not going to school, you know, in person. And I know we've experienced a lot of families that they've had to juggle their dynamics around. And sometimes, you know, kids, school-age kids or grandkids are staying with their grandparents and stuff because of either financial or work impacts during this COVID period. So I appreciate that.
Now, with lots of programs for kids, none of them we've talked about tonight, but lots of programs that are specific to kids and families, school, in school, out of school kind of structures, but that's a different topic.
Yeah, okay. And to that, we will deliver boxes or we'll deliver the school meals that people can pick up. That is one of the things that we'll transport out to a family if they have no way to get there. So we'll get the food to whoever needs the food or any necessity, pharmacy, anything like that.
Hey, welcome back, Tanya.
Thank you. My camera's been wonky tonight. I'm not sure what's going on, so I apologize for that.
It's happening to everybody.
Chuck's going to solve the world's internet needs, though. That
would be so well, you've been loud and clear in my ears, which I didn't realize. I didn't realize my camera was off, so I apologize. But just I switched it up, so you have a different angle from my office.
Okay, well, I need to move us on, but I want to thank all of our presenters. Thank you very much. This has been a wealth of information, a lot of takeaways for us, and really appreciate everything that you've presented to us. So, Commission, thank you. Let's thank our presenters. I don't know if we can do this.
Thank you.
All right. Jose, were there anybody raise their hand while all that was going, if there was any general public comments? So is he still there?
Yes, I am.
Okay.
I have not seen any.
All right.
No reason.
I'm going to move us to commission communications and announcements. Do we have any liaison updates? Those are members of our commission who serve on other boards or committees. Do we have any updates from anybody? Jenna, I don't believe Amy had any updates on the public health group.
Did you? About them a month ago. They were looking, they're specifically focusing on COVID education for three populations that are not interested in following government regulations and think that COVID's a hoax. And he was going to look at how many older adults are in those communities. And when he gets back to me, we can talk about what we might do to help.
Okay, thank you. Welcome back.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be here.
So, any other liaison updates? All right. Liaison roles. During our work session earlier this afternoon, we assigned liaisons to four different groups. And Jackie, do you happen to have those handy and can quickly read them off?
Sure. So Amy's going to retain liaison with public health. And commission members, jump in if I get any of this wrong, because I know there's some backups. And I have to go back there a few pages of notes here. But we've got Tanya Stewart. She's going to start liaison with the ADRN, so the Aging and Disability Resource Network. So she'll be taking that from Amy as well. So we have a new commission member representing on that as a liaison. And then Chuck is going to go ahead and participate on the Accessible Transportation Coalition. That's also part of what Human Services Council does. So, and we'll have some backups that will back all of those liaisons up if they can't attend those meetings or participate. So we're excited to see new members with new roles.
All right, thank you.
All right, did I miss one?
What was that?
Did I miss any?
I thought there were four, but now I don't remember which one.
It was the ADRN, ATCI, and public health. Those were the.
Okay.
I think there was Human Services Council, maybe Linda. I don't mean to interrupt. Oh,
yes.
Yeah. Thanks. Thank you, Tanya.
All right.
Hey, Chuck. Amy wants to chime in.
Yes, Amy.
I just want to tell Tanya I just forwarded the ADRN materials to her.
Thank you. I'm collecting a library.
Okay, so our next meeting is November 18th, and we're going to be talking about housing challenges for vulnerable older adults during COVID-19. And we will present our first ever Silver Citizen Award. And so I wish all of the public who are able could join us. This is going to be another Very interesting meeting, and especially recognizing somebody in our community who's really served and has, well, there's a lot of people who've served very well in our community. This is one who we want to recognize for their participation, their support, and volunteering for the aging population in our community. So with that, I'd like to entertain a motion to adjourn. Anybody want to move to adjourn?
Second.
All right, all in favor?
Aye.
All right, well, thank you, everybody. Thanks to those who joined us from the community. We will see you next month.
Thank you.
All right. Bye, Amy. I'm going to hang up.
Thank you, Jenna. Okay. Thank you for your help. Bye.
Jenna and Jackie, thank you so much.